The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Z Live, off the record with Chicago Lines, brought to you in part by Fidelity Bank, Burger King, and Royal Star Assurance.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Chivago, your host. So glad that you can join us today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. I trust and hope that you are doing well. If you want to give us a call at all today on the show, the numbers to do so are 323-6232. That's 323-6232. Or 325-4316, or 325-4259. That's 325-4259. You can also text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. That's 439-3043. You can catch us live on Cable Bahamas Channel 969. That's the way my mother does it. Or you can catch us on BTC Flow Channel 612. It's BTC Flow Channel 612. All right, so I want to go through something with you today that will kind of, I think, help you see a big picture concern about what has been happening in the Bahamas. In particular, what has been happening to Bahamian households and why it is that there is this enormous sense of unfairness, this enormous sense of lacking progress, this enormous sense of failing prosperity that's been taking place. And we're going to do that by looking at some numbers. So you got to follow me today. If you got your pencil or paper or pen and paper, you may want to follow me today. But just before I get to that, let me mention a couple of things that I want to carry over from the show yesterday. At least one thing, and then something else I want to mention. So someone from the F&M Council called the show yesterday and said that when I indicated that the prime minister, the leader of the party, is the leader of the party, of the F&M party, cannot simply name candidates and decide who's going to run and not run, he used as an example this, what he alleged. Remember, you will recall I said I didn't know anything about what he said. He said that Mr. Ingram, as a condition to accepting the leadership of the Free National Movement in 90 or 92 or leading into the election or whatever it was, he said that Mr. Ingram got the council to agree that he would be able to name 60% of the candidates. And so he had control over that. Well, I explained to him that in any event, if it were true, that the council would have given Mr. Ingram that delegated authority. And so it wasn't the same as him simply deciding he was going to do it. And I explained that the process nonetheless was such that we still had to go through the association's vetting. We still had to go through the executive committee. We still had to go through the council to get nominated. And I explained all that because I went through that experience. I don't have to make it up. It was my experience. I ran for the Free National Movement 4 times. Not once, 4 times. Okay? So I have a little bit of experience in that matter. Anyways, I called Mr. Ingram. I called the Right Honorable Hubert Alexander Ingram and asked him about this matter. And Mr. Ingram explained to me that that was untrue. Let me say it again. That what that gentleman from the council said was untrue. He said what in fact did happen was there was a slate of candidates that was being proposed to run in that upcoming election. And that he thought that there needed to be an adjustment to that slate. But the negotiation that they came to was that all of the incumbent candidates of the Free National Movement, all the incumbents would run, which he said was about 15 or 16. He said, and then all the other people they agreed would be new people. And he said, he never himself selected the people. He said he, along with sitting members of parliament and candidates, formed a candidates committee. You heard me read from the constitution of the FNN, that executive committee that consisted of members of parliament, senators, and so forth. And he said to me, Mr. Ingram, I think that process we agreed still exists today. I said, yes, it does, because I read in the constitution what it was. He said, I never, by myself, decided who was going to run or not run. He said there was a candidates committee. Okay? And so, and that was, and he said that there were candidates that he may have had different views about in terms of running, but they actually ended up running. So it wasn't his process. And so my council friend, member friend, apparently the man who you made the allegation against about the 60% denied that it was so. I didn't get that. Third party, I spoke to Mr. Ingram myself, and I indicated to him that I would clarify the matter on the show today. That's the first thing. Second thing is, I see BPC has found that there's no commercially viable quantities of oil in the location where they searched first. Now, that doesn't mean no oil. It just means that there ain't no oil enough to make no money according to their finding. BPC obviously took a huge hit from that in terms of their stock prices, because now investors feel like, oh, well, you know. If you listen to the language of BPC's press release on the matter, they are acknowledging that finding, as they must, but they are also seeming to indicate that, you know, there are other sites that they want to test and check for commercial quantities. So the government of the Bahamas has decisions to make in respect of further exploration for oil in the country. I imagine that should be a big issue in the upcoming election with respect to the platforms of the political parties. And so we'll see. Now, there is a different take on BPC's finding, though, that I would like to just mention. And I have to say that I had this notion, but I credit Sir Franklin Wilson for bringing up the notion, too, which is this. Yes, you can celebrate BPC's failure in finding commercial quantities of oil, because if you are an activist, an environmentalist, and you don't want oil, et cetera, and other people such as that, that's a great thing for you. You can be sad that it is the case, because maybe you wanted this oil because you think we need it. We need the economic injection. Whatever your situation is, that's not my point. Here's my point. It is an example of something. It is an example of something. Here is a group of people who have plowed millions and millions of dollars into an exercise, a business venture that has turned up nothing, no thing. They did the work. They put the money in to find what? Nothing. Yet some of us, we fail to see the gravity of that. We only think about people after they sell in their products and making money. After the oil is being sold on the market, after the this and that is being sold on the market, we don't think about the millions of dollars people plow into these ventures and sometimes meet with nothing but failure. I know about it. We just hollow all day because the only side of the picture we see is if it's successful. We aren't going to put our money into it. Me put my money? Oh, I know in that, Jack. That's for the government and them. This is business. This is entrepreneurship. Now, you have to make investments. See, the stuff in the ground has to be plowed out the ground if it is worth anything to be sold. That tree has to be trimmed, manufactured in whatever way it is to make a chair. And all of that before you sell a dime of it requires money. And I hope we can at least see that lesson. In it, that lesson, $100 million+ to come up north. That's entrepreneurship too. That's a part of the story. So when we sit around thinking we can get some big money checks in our pockets from whatever exists in the Bahamas, natural resources, unnatural resources, whatever exists, let them put it in a sovereign wealth fund and we can get our money out of it. Investments require putting money in first. Returns do not come without money's going input at first. And that input is sometimes so risky that you don't even get a return when the deed is done. I know that's, you know, one of the things that we can see. And again, I thank Sir Franklin for in a area, in a place, making note of that very real circumstance that face entrepreneurs. Okay. So if I am successful today with our discussion, I may be able to cancel a couple of myths about the Bahamas and Bahamians. I may also be able to help you see a fundamental challenge that we face that I do not believe there is either the policy proposition or the personal effort in the main being taken to address it. So let me share some things with you. In 1973, when the Bahamas became an independent country, 1973, our gross domestic product, now let me explain what that is. That is, if you take all the income generated in the Bahamas to be able to spend on things, if you take all of it together, that which comes from the households, like individual private people, that which comes from businesses through their investments, that which comes from the government through its net revenue and taxes, that which comes from the earnings we get from net of exports less imports, if you add all of that income together generated by this country, if we call that the gross domestic product of the Bahamas, GDP, okay? That's what we call it, gross domestic product. So it's like adding up all our individual incomes, all the business income, all the government income, all the export income we generate, net of imports for the country. That's called the gross domestic product of the Bahamas. When we became an independent nation, what was that gross domestic product? It was about $671 million. $671 million, okay? That was about $330 million shy of $1 billion. That's in 1973. 10 years later, 10 years. Listen to me now. Listen to me. 10 years later, what was that amount? What was the gross domestic product of the country 10 years after independence? It was $1.73 billion. It was more than $1 billion higher than it was 10 years before. In other words, our gross domestic product increased by 152%. Now, let me help you with something. In order for that increase to happen, the citizens of the Bahamas, the businesses of the Bahamas, the government of the Bahamas, all of those entities transacting in this economy, whether they were Bahamian period or international persons operating from within the Bahamas, all together in 10 years' time, grew the Bahamas's gross domestic product by 152%. You can't call that group of people slack. That's an average 15% a year growth. That's an average 15% a year growth. That's an economy that is moving. Okay? All right. Now, what happened between 1983 and 1993? Well, from 1983 to 1993, the economy went from $1.7 billion to $3 billion. $3 billion. Again, you're making moves. Economy's growing. An increase of 76%. No, you didn't have that stellar 154% growth, but you had a stellar growth of 76%. That's an average 7.6% growth in that period of time of the GDP, right? Now, what happened in 2003, 10 years later, after 93? That GDP grew to $8.8 billion from $3 billion. Now, I have to say something here. All of that growth is not mere economic, because that's 193% growth, mere economic growth, even though it was, but it wasn't as stellar as we think, because remember, in that period, the Department of Statistics had to make some adjustments to gross domestic product calculation, because it had always been thought that the Bahamas was underestimating the size of its economy, not capturing all of its economic value. And they made an adjustment, and that adjustment may have been reflected here to show this number. But in any event, there was, even if you half that amount, half it, half the growth, you are talking about a growth of some 80% in that decade. Again, you are talking about annualized growth of about 8%. Still very reasonably impressive. But notice something. You're going down. Your growth over the decades is going down. You started at 154%. You went to 76%. If we half what we got in that other period, it's about 80%. You're going down. Now, I want you to listen to me, folks. Listen to the numbers. Listen. So look at those double-digit growths you had in between 73 and 83, 83 and 93, 93 and 2003. I'm talking about stellar 154% growth, 76% growth, 80% growth plus stellar. Between 2003 and 2013, how much did the Bahamian economy grow? It went from $8.8 billion to $10.5 billion. It still grew in that decade, but it grew by 19%. Listen now, you go from 80%, 100% to 19% in a decade. That's an average growth of 1.9%. That is what we call moderate growth, okay? Moderate growth. And then what happened from 2013 to now? Well, you went from economy of, say, $10.5 billion to $11.8 billion. And that growth over that decade, that period, not quite a decade yet, was 12%. Okay, so 12%. So you're looking at really around about 1.4% growth. So you have, again, meager, moderate growth in a decade. So what this tells us is a couple of things. One, to say that Bahamians have not the capacity, the Bahamas has not the capacity to generate and be very productive in expanding its economic circumstances, it's a fallacy. That is not true. We have done it and we have shown it over the course of our history that we have to ask what in fact was happening in those periods when we had that stellar growth. And it's not uncommon for new nations to coming out of farming, fishing as a way of life and entering into a service economy as we did, having not even passed through manufacturing to have stellar growth. And then to have that growth taper off over time. That's not, as a maturing economy, that's not unusual. But you do see the capacity to generate productively in the economy. And so we've seen that. We also see, though, that while that maturing growth was possible, we see that the drop-off has been phenomenally significant. All right? It's phenomenally significant. So such that for the last two decades, our growth rate, average growth rate, has been under 2% for two decades, 20 years. Okay? So those two stories are clear from the numbers. Now let's look at GDP per capita. What is GDP per capita? When you take the GDP, the gross domestic product that I talked about, the national income, the country's income, and you divide that by the population, you get what we call the gross domestic product. Now, that number is telling. It's helpful because we know that by looking at gross domestic product, we can tell many things are likely about a country given its gross domestic product. We're not saying by gross domestic product, every person in the country is making this, right? And here's what some people do when you talk about gross domestic product. So we say the gross domestic product of the Bahamas is $30,000, right? And some people say, oh, but we know Bahamians ain't making that. There are many people making minimum wage. Well, here's the flip side of your own story, right? While it's true that there are Bahamians who are not making the $30,000 a year, it is also true that you are saying that some other people, Bahamians, who we know making $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 a year are making $30,000. And that's not true. So it's an averaging out across the population to get a sense of where the income stream in the country is. But it's not a perfect at all story. So nobody should look at gross domestic product and try to size up an economy, size up a people, and to suggest that this tells you everything about a country. Because it can't. It doesn't cover people who make below the GDP, and it doesn't cover people who make far above the GDP, right? I don't make the GDP. I make above the GDP, right? And many professionals like me make above the GDP. At the station, there may be many professionals or professionals who make above the GDP. So you can't argue, oh, it doesn't cover only the people who make under the GDP, because it doesn't cover the people who make above the GDP either. It's a metric, one metric. We have many metrics we use in economics. It is one of the more common metrics used to look at what a country is doing. And what is important is not the absolute number, but the relative number. So we know, for instance, that if we look at our GDP compared to Haiti's GDP, you can tell why the Haitians are, many of them, trying to get to the Bahamas, because they're trying to get to a place where the prosperity level is higher, and that is indicated by our GDP. Okay. What was our GDP in 1973 when we achieved independence. It was $3,696. What was it 10 years later? 10 years later, it was $7,698. In 10 years, 108% increase. So that increase reflected the increase in the GDP because our economy was certainly growing a lot faster than our population. Okay? What was our GDP in per capita in 93? It was $11,407 from the $7,698. So the increase was 48%. Now, remember, the GDP in that same period increased by 76%. But the GDP per capita increased by 46%. Watch this space. Watch it. What was it in 2003 compared to 1993? In 2003, the GDP jumped to $28,327 from $11,407. But remember, we made that adjustment, so that would have been a reflected too. So it was 148%. But let's say we half it, you get 74% compared to the 80% that you had in the GDP growth. All right? In 2013, it was $28,784. Listen to me, folks. Is anybody listening to me? If you're listening to me, please send me a text. Say you're listening to me so I can know, because listen to me. Remember I said that in 2013, the GDP was in 2003, the GDP was $28,327. Do you know what it was a decade later, 10 years later? It was $28,784, meaning it literally didn't even move. Notwithstanding the growth of the economy to 19%, by 19%, it didn't grow in that decade. The GDP hardly grew, hardly. And what was it in 2020? $30,027. $30,027. By the way, that $30,027 is lower than what it was in 2016. What does that tell us? A number of things. It tells us that our GDP did in fact grow up to 2003, had stellar growth in the period between 93 and 2003. And good growth before that time too, but it tapered off. That growth severely tapered off after 2003. Severely tapered off. Additionally, it tells us that if you look at the gains the economy had compared to the gains that the per capita had, something was amiss, because those gains were not going to the population per se, at least not large segments of the population per se. Right? Because notwithstanding you had growth of almost $2.96 billion in the economy between 2013 and 2020, notwithstanding that, the GDP per capita in that period grew by a mere $1,300, a smaller percentage than that amount, basically. Right? So the question you would ask is, like, as the Bahamas' economy grew in this way, where was the money going? Who was the money going to? Where was the money going? We got a call on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening.
Caller, did you know what's wrong with you, Shivago?
Yes, sir. How you doing?
I'm holding, thank God. What I want to ask you, two questions. When we had the large GDP, right? How many people, what was the population of the Bahamas, and what was we producing at that time?
The population was around 225,000 or thereabouts, and you were producing the same thing. You're basically producing today, which is tourism and financial services.
Tourism and financial services.
Yeah.
Well, we got to do better than that. We got to start producing like food and other stuff like that. Because the tourism, not doing it for us. The financial market.
Well, good luck with that. Good luck with that calculation, Brahman. Because that's not a good calculation you're making at all.
You don't think so?
Not at all, my brother.
Well, okay, let me ask you another question.
Sure.
Okay.
Mind you, I'm not saying don't try to create more of your food. Go ahead, please. Let's do that. That makes good sense. But what I'm saying is you can't compare what you can produce in food to what you can produce in tourism and financial services. You can't compare it.
But the thing is, what tourism doing for us now, today?
My friend, listen to me. That's like a man saying to me, who happens to be an architect who was once making $100,000 a year, that because the architectural field has turned down and he don't have that much to do, he asks, what is architecture doing for me today? Well, it ain't doing nothing for you because there ain't no opportunities there right now. But when the opportunities come back, you'll be smiling again.
If the opportunity comes back.
When?
Okay, my last point is, right?
We've lived in periods where we've had downturns in tourism already, my friend. So it's not as if this is strange to us, not as severe as this, but we have lived in strange times.
Before we became independent, right? We were making more money with less people.
You're wrong for that. First of all, Brahman, before you became independent, tourism was still your business, and so was financial services.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, we had less people.
No, that's why I use per capita income. So you cancel out the population when you use per capita income.
So you don't agree that if we start producing other than tourism and financial, we would be doing better?
No, I agree that if you produce, let me tell you something. If you produce more tourism and more financial services, you will also be doing better. Period.
just producing
more tourism and financial services, you'll do better too.
I didn't get that.
Yeah, I didn't think so. What I'm saying to you is, let's say you don't do anything differently. If you have more tourists come, so let's say we have 10 million tourists come, and we get much more financial services customers, will we not be doing better?
We would, but then how much would we be putting out of the country of that?
But brother, that's a different set of discussions. But that's a different set of discussions. But I understand.
But we
need to save,
and we need to produce in order to save.
Yeah, I got you. I appreciate it. All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate your calling. All right. We're going to take a break, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. When we come back, we keep talking about it, man. Where's the money going? We'll be back after this break.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody.
Basketball is back, baby, and so is NBA League Pass, only with Rev Trio. Sign up for Rev Trio today and enjoy NBA League Pass absolutely free, along with incredible prizes, including a brand new 50-inch smart TV, NBA gear, and more. With tons of prizes and gear, signing up for Trio is the best on- and off-court move this year. Just call 601-8992 or visit www.rev.bs/promotions/trio. Sign up for Rev Trio today and enjoy NBA League Pass absolutely free.
Say aloha to something delicious from Burger King NASA. Introducing the all-new Hawaiian Whopper and Hawaiian Crispy Chicken Sandwiches. Enjoy the classic flame-grilled Whopper or our crispy chicken breast topped with ham, pineapple, smoky barbecue sauce, cheese, and all the fixins. Grab it with both hands and savor the tropical flavor. Whether you choose chicken or flame-grilled beef, you're gonna love it. The Hawaiian Whopper and Hawaiian Chicken Sandwiches are all new and only at Burger King NASA, where taste is king.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. So glad that you could join us today. We're asking the question, where's money going? We have some text here says, could the drop off in GDP after 2003 be due to advent of blacklist and the shedding of the financial services industry since 2001? No, it can't, actually. It can't. You can't explain it in that, because if you look at the gross contribution of the financial services sector to the economy, it hasn't changed that much. You still have basically 4,000 people employed in that sector. Remember, a lot of the people who were in the sector who left, they were brass plate entities. A lot of them, they basically had their offices in some law firm or the other and really weren't maintaining any real presence. That's why you have now the presence or substance legislation that is being called for now. And that might even actually help to boost our contribution from financial services. So I can't explain it. I can't explain it at all. There are a number of explanations for it, but there's a larger story in it. So those of you who say you're listening, thank you. I'm happy to hear that. Thank you. Appreciate your listening. All right. Let me see. I got a couple of other texts here I want to read. This text says, what was the growth in 2019? I don't think 2020 is a fair comparison. Well, first of all, that's why I did decade. And this is why I need you to listen to me, because I don't want to get caught up in a discussion about year to year. I did decades. We weren't talking about what did the Bahamas do in 1973 versus 1974 versus 1975. We did it by decades. Okay, so what happened in 2020 was extraordinary, but in point of fact, that I didn't even allow for yet the real 16% cutback in the GDP in 2020 per se. This number of 2020 is around that same $12 billion that we keep talking about we have. All right. We may have been in the $13 billion by 2020. So that doesn't materially affect anything about what I'm saying at all. So I'm sorry if you missed the point. We're not dealing year by year. We're dealing decades by decades. Okay? Decades. So, this text is, I'm listening. Educate the people. Thank you. I'm listening. Thank you, listening. But you're going fast. Am I going fast? What was the growth? Oh, that's the same person. That person missed the whole point about the decade. We're looking at decades. Decades. I also started in 73 so that I didn't have to end up going through any political discussions like, oh, why you started 67 and then you went to 77 and them and so forth. No, I wanted to deal with just the years, the void of the politics, and decades, the void of the year-to-year change. Because the year-to-year changes in trend analysis sometimes can get you caught up in minutia. That's just like people who invest and keep looking at their stock price every day. That's nonsense. That's why Warren Buffett says, you invest, you look at the long game and see what's happening in your economy in the long game. Okay, so let me make another point to you before on the other side of the news. We get into let's hear from you. Let's talk about this, because this story is telling us something. All of this is telling us something about our economy. One of which is, the big story is, if GDP per capita is a measure of wealth, and we typically say that the Bahamas is one of the wealthiest developing countries in the world because of its high per capita income. We typically say the Bahamas has the third highest per capita income in the Americas. And they measure America's wealth by per capita income, Canada's wealth, United Kingdom's wealth, Norway's, Finland's, Bahamas'. So everybody gets caught in this. So it's a relative comparison that it's apples and apples. So we say we have the third highest per capita income in the Americas. The only countries of the 34 countries in the Americas that have higher per capita incomes than ours is the United States first, Canada second, Bahamas third, Barbados next. And Barbados, it used to be not so close, but Barbados is bridging the gap in over the last couple of decades, okay? And so it tells us something about our wealth as a, country, not you personally. Because if this was saying something about you personally, some of you don't make $28,000, $30,000 a year. But if it was talking about some other people personally, you think people like Sir Franklin and others who are owners of significant businesses, what have you, are making $28,000, $30,000 a year? No, we know better, right? If you're the chairman of a corporation, if you're the president of a company, a general manager, would you be making $28,000 a year? No. So this can't say, well, what your wealth is. It's just talking about as a whole, when you look at the country, what the wealth indication is. Or what we now know from what the information I gave you is that our wealth in terms of GDP per capita has moved very little precisely since 2003. So in 2023, that would be 20 years. It's moved very little. But I told you all this the other day. Remember, I told you all that millennials, people who are millennials and in their 40s, basically, and others, they lived in the Bahamas and it's not been prospering. Well, there you have some numbers, additional numbers to verify that. So we know that story. We also know the story that we have had and shown the capacity to be very productive. So that's another story. So if we have an appreciative analysis or inquiry into our situation, we can look back on our history and say we have the capacity to be very productive, okay? And so the only other question would be, how do we achieve that? Let me give you another story. You remember I said that the GDP of the country is now like, say, $12 billion. Remember I said that? Okay. Do you know what the household income take of that $12 billion is? Like, if you take all the households in the Bahamas who make under $40,000, all the households. Now, remember, a household in Department of Statistics numbers can mean, it's really an economic entity that could comprise a family grouping of four. It could be just one individual in that house, because you could be one person living in a household and that could be your household, or you could be three people, four people, five people, 10 people living in a household and that's your household. So we talk about households here, not as in individuals, but the unit, that unit as a home we're talking about. If you look at the people, the households that make under $40,000, their take of that $12 billion is $1.3 billion. $1.3 billion. Basically, 10% of that take is theirs. If you look at all the households that make under $8 billion, comparing 2000 and basically 2003, 2002 and 2016, their take is about $2.8 billion. So that's 80% plus of the households in the country. Their take is $2.8 billion or 23% of the total. Okay? 23%. I'm going to say that slow. I'm going to slow down. Slow down. Okay. So, of the $12 billion in income generated, households, their take of it is 32%. So, that's relatively small. In the United States, I think it might be 60+% or something, close to 70%. Because 70% of American GDP could be explained by consumers. So the households in the Bahamas are not the ones that have that lion's share of the income. What is also very true is that number ain't changed basically in more than a decade. Okay? So what I'm saying to you as a gross observation of our situation is that tightness you feel isn't because money isn't being made in the Bahamas. Stop lying to yourself about that. All right? In 2019, you made $11 billion, almost $12 billion. So you made almost $12 billion. And the year before that, $11 billion. The year before that, $11 billion, $10 billion, $11 billion. So you've been making billions and billions. But your take of it is going elsewhere. Going where? Where's the gains going? Where? If you increase the economy size, think about this, folks. If you increase the economy size from about $2 billion in 83 to $12 billion in 2020, in 2019, okay, that's $10 billion increase. Mind you, listen to this. That's not $10 billion over the period 1983 to 2019, you know. That's an annual billions of dollars in increase. And money's being made annually. So over that period, we have made, that's 2083 to 2019. That's almost 20 years or so. So let's say on average, we made $7 billion over that 20 years. $7 billion times 19. Right? That's a lot of money. $140 billion made in the Bahamas. Where the money gone? We know where 20-30% of it went, the households. Where did the rest go? And before you start thinking about foreigners, check yourself. We can talk about it on the back end. Where did the money go? Where did gains go? Where did all those millions and billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars generated in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas by the industry of the Bay, the residents and citizens and businesses of the Bahamas, where did those gains go? Now, just remember now, those are gross numbers, not net. So that's one of the things we can talk about to on the other side. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're going to take a break for news, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussions. We'll be back after the news break.
Take a stand, everybody, everybody. Come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm. Let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been can't down the same road.
Johnny Moe's burning down the house frying chicken.
Your kitchen is a mess. You have insurance?
If I have insurance, I pulled my phone out, pulled up the Royal Star Assurance app, and in no time, I was on live chat with RSA Rep. Sent pics of the damage, filed my claim on the spot.
Wow, I don't think my insurance got that kind of...
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
Do you have paper investments like stocks, bonds, or mutual funds, but are unsure if you're reaching your highest earning potential? Get your investment portfolio assessed by an experienced RF investment specialist. You'll get expert investment guidance at absolutely no cost, even if you're not an RF client. Plus, find out how you can take advantage of some of the best performing mutual funds in the market. What are you waiting for? Claim your free confidential portfolio analysis today by emailing invest@rfmeet.com. RF, money at work.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.99 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Meet Jackie. Jackie's a hard worker with a steady income, but she has a personal loan and multiple credit cards to pay off. To keep her account current, Jackie opted for a loan from Fidelity Bank to consolidate her debt into one monthly payment and earn interest on a built-in savings account. Be like Jackie. Call 356-7764 to book a complimentary financial coaching session. Fidelity also offers virtual assistance. Fidelity, we're good for you.
It takes a village to raise a child, and it takes each and every one of us to grow the Bahamas. On the Clock, we dive into the stories, we identify the issues, and we engage the people, organizations, and institutions that keep the country running. On the Clock with Aaron Green, weekdays 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM.
Don't let your children get left behind. Get them immunized. They need immunizations to protect them from some diseases, to get into school, and to apply for some jobs. Contact your nearest clinic or healthcare provider to make an immunization appointment today. Protect their health and their future. Remember, immunizations are free at all government healthcare facilities. Let's prevent disease. Immunize, please. This message has been brought to you by the Ministry of Health.
Do you have paper investments like stocks, bonds, or mutual funds, but are unsure if you're reaching your highest earning potential? Get your investment portfolio assessed by an experienced RF investment specialist. You'll get expert investment guidance at absolutely no cost, even if you're not an RF client. Plus, find out how you can take advantage of some of the best performing mutual funds in the market. What are you waiting for? Claim your free confidential portfolio analysis today by emailing invest@rfmeet.com. RF. Money at work.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand. Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm.
Glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon, where we have been looking at some numbers in the country, the GDP numbers, the GDP per capita numbers, and trying to tell a story about it now based on a conversation I had not too long ago. I want to try and go over at least one salient point again about these numbers so that you don't miss what I am saying. Because if you get stuck thinking about these numbers merely in terms of year to year, you are not going to catch what the big point is that I am making, right? Which is, let me say it simply and slowly again for you. One of the points that I am seeking to make is that many times people say that Bahamians are not productive, that we don't produce. And I'm saying, to take an economy in 1973 from $670 million to in 2019, thereabouts, to $12 billion is no small feat. Okay? That's a substantial increase in production. So the question is, why? The question is, how do you then, in doing that kind of thing, say that a people, a country cannot be productive? I did the numbers just don't bear that out. Now, mind you, the numbers also say we were abundantly more productive in our earlier years up to 2003 than we were since that time. Okay? So we've been able to produce better growth prior to 2003 than we have been producing since 2003. The question is why. Additionally, what I was trying to say is that if you look at the economy of the Bahamas over the period of 1983, for instance, to 2019, over that period, this economy generated $277 billion. And if you add the decade before that, the total added is $283 billion, right? So if you think of the fact that household income seemed to be, households in the Bahamas seem to be getting about 30% of the income generated, the question is where's the rest going? And now these are gross numbers, okay? So not every dollar that's made in the economy is a dollar that is isn't used to spend. So it's not that the profits, that $270 billion represents profits, but it does represent income generated in the overall economy. And the numbers tell us, the numbers say that the Bahamian household share of the gains in the economy has been seriously stagnant over decades. That's the big story. Stagnant. If you're worrying about what happened between 2020 and 2019, you missed the big story. What has happened over the last two decades with regard to the level of income increase enjoyed by Bahamian households? It has been basically stagnant. Now, if your income is stagnant and the cost of your living is going up, what's going to happen to the way you feel about your financial situation? You're going to feel squeezed. And why not? You've been sitting at the same per capita income for almost two decades. So your general country even doesn't feel more prosperous. Now, mind you, It's been generating billions and billions of dollars. So not everyone in the country has been feeling this. And the mistake we might make is thinking that those everyone is simply some individual taking all the money. But ultimately, some people getting the money. Some individuals getting the money, because if you own, all corporations are owned by people. And the profits that are given by those companies are given to the owners. So the income isn't in the majority going to the households. So where is it going? Huh? It's going to corporations and government. Right? So whoever the corporations are, some of them are Bahamian owned, some of them are foreign owned. The government is a government, and it's taking up that money too, net of expenditure, but mostly living in deficit. And so I think that we have to take a deeper dive into our economies, circumstances, and ask the question, why are Bahamian households not getting better and more income from the gains in the economy? Because it isn't enough to say the economy isn't growing fast. That's not enough. Okay, all that would say is the amount of gains that they would get isn't as high as you would like it to be. So the rate of growth of the economy would dictate the rate of growth of the gains. But for two decades, given that we have expanded the economy in those two decades by almost $4 billion, it isn't enough to simply say that the growth of the economy isn't very high. I think that structurally speaking, there is something that is keeping Bahamian households from gaining more. Now, let me tell you that this problem isn't unique to the Bahamas. It is a problem that is true in the United States of America. That if, despite the expansion of the U.S. economy over these decades, the American household isn't experiencing the same gains as, say, the 1% of America's population is experiencing by the gains they're getting. Because what is happening is companies, as they get richer in the economy, in the expanded economy, they are not giving those gains in any significant way to workers. They're giving those gains to owners as dividends or retaining it as capital gains for stock appreciation, and they get the gains on the market that way. They're not even plowing the money as much into training so that people could at least improve their skill set to be able to maybe enjoy more gains. And there are economists who also evaluate that this talk about, oh, people need more education for the new economy, that doesn't even get it, because lots of educated people can't see any significant gains over these decades in their income as much as the corporations and the owners of corporations are seeing. There's structurally something amiss. So if you look at, let me give an example of something. You all know our politicians, like I was, and like, don't get mad with me. I'm like, just shit. He's just past that reality. If you look at the period when unions had more power in the country, they were able to negotiate better terms for their workers. And that period was prior to 1983. And so that gain was reflected in the incomes of hotel workers and other workers. But unions have been in some way gutted over the years, right? And I think part of that was the Ingram administration, part of it was the Pendleton administration, and the Christie administration didn't make no improvements of it, and the Minnis administration ain't doing nothing about it either. So the unions aren't as powerful to negotiate more of the gains for their employees that they would have, because the employers keep saying, oh, the economy, they're nothing, blah, 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 we can't make no money. Well, let me ask you a question. You ain't making no money, but the economy goes from $8.8 billion to 12. Somebody making money. Right? So you've had that structural impediment to, and whether it's unions or something else, there is an impediment to the negotiated terms of workers in the country. Now, I know you're a businessman, won't hear this, pay people more. I know you don't want to hear it. But what you are going to hear is this. If Bahamians keep feeling that there is an economy that is unfairly rewarding only the owners of capital at the expense of the workers, that dissatisfaction is going to produce for you all kinds of things, including wastage, including mediocrity, including dissatisfaction and poor morale that lowers productivity, and eventually it could even mean rebellion. It's going to happen because people are not going to keep feeling a pinch year in, year out. You getting a Lexus, you getting a Tesla, you getting a yacht, and they can hardly make the rent, the mortgage. Now, don't get me wrong. Some of the financial challenges that people face are nothing, have everything to do with their own choices. But that alone doesn't explain the circumstances of the country. Does not. There is a distribution issue. And I'm not calling, and I'm not saying the government can fix this distribution. For God's sake, don't let the government fix the distribution. Any government. I'm saying that structurally, the way the economy is, we got very little bonus sharing. We've got very little pension schemes. We've got very little profit sharing. We got too many things that don't lend to a more reasonable sharing of gains to households in the economy. And the numbers reflect it. Let me read some of these texts that I have. This text says, hi, the Americans are really going to win during the pandemic. They will print their dollars and buy up debt, control territories. That's far too simplistic, far too simplistic, far too. Some people are gonna win. You better believe the lenders of money are gonna win big time. But they ain't only Americans. The Chinese lending plenty of money. There are wealthy British people who are lending plenty of money. Wealthy Europeans who are lending plenty of money. There are plenty South Americans who are lending plenty of money. So they're just the Americans. But you are right. The owners, the lenders of money, oh, they're going to win in COVID big time. And they're going to win for generations to come. That's, these countries have to pay off that money. See, just don't forget, America printing money isn't merely America printing money, because America doesn't print money and then hand it out to its citizens. America prints money to pump into the economy through a process. And a part of that process involves lending the money out to financial institutions and others. And so it's all a borrowing scenario. So what you see in expansion is credit. And on the other side of credit, two sides of credit are the borrowers and the lenders. And if you're borrowing, you can pay. And if you're lending, you can receive, right? In the long run, returns, interest rates, interest revenue. This text says, just do a GDP graph related to the changing political administrations if you really want to start a fight. That's a good point. And the graph would be telling to some degree. It would be most telling in the 90s and the early to mid 80s. It would be most telling. This text says, does the Bahamas per capita income include the wealthy permanent residents The per capita income includes your population. And your population is largely a question of your citizens and your, I think your permanent residence might be included in that. But don't quote me on that. But if your answer is that, if your take is that they distort the numbers for us, that argument is far too simplistic, and it is not really the story at all. You can try it, but it's not. It's really not the story at all. Says, does the Bahamas, says 37 years, laugh out loud, not 20. 37 years, what you mean? Well, not 20. Which 37, 20? Did I count something wrong? Says, this class is easy. It went to imports, good materials, food, government rent, salary, Walmart purchases. yeah. But it's something different, though. See, if you understand how GDP is calculated, you can't say it that easily because, first of all, GDP calculation starts with private households, okay? And so I just gave you the private household's income, which is about the total, about almost say $4 billion, okay? So they can only spend what they earn, $4 billion in income. That's what they have. So how do you describe and explain the rest? Yes, the businesses are making expenditure and investments for building and blah, 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 and so forth and so forth and so forth. But they have to have it to make it, right? You have to have it to make it. Says Lang, what pissed me off was when I heard a major hotel say they spent too much money training staff, so they don't want to give them a package leave. So when you say businesses are being hoggish and not trickling down the wealth, you are correct. Allow people to move on if they can make money elsewhere. Well, first of all, businesses can't stop you from moving on. So you can move on if you want. They can't stop you. They might desire to not lose you, but they can't really stop you. So you can go. And there's nothing they can do about it. But I understand a business's plight to have trained and have somebody move on. But that's part of life because those same businesses don't have the issues taking a customer from another competitor who's invested money in getting that customer. So what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Says taxes have increased while income stagnant and borrowings on the increase. Disaster waiting to happen. Forgot to throw in the major disasters, namely Dorian, COVID-19, which we should have been providing for in the financials yearly, but if not sufficient, another disaster. All right. We got a call on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Hey, Minister. Hello.
Hi, hello.
Boy, I can barely hear you. Are you able to tell me, and then I want to hang up and listen and go to my radio because I really can't hear your signal today. But there was a time when I think Mr. C.B. Morse was able to, he had a formula because he was in banking, and he was able to show how much money in the pockets of Bahamians. He had a formula to that effect, and I'm wondering if you can help me to determine that value. I need to hang up and listen because I can't hear your message.
No, hang up. Can you say again for me, please? Hello? My brother, I missed entirely what you were saying because for some reason I had some issue trying to hear you. If you want to call back, please call back, but I can't answer because I didn't catch the question. This text says, hi, sir. If we are honest with ourselves, we need you, Mr. Ingram, and Mr. Christie back in office. This is crunch time and the faint of hearts are resigning in our parliament. We need a Tom Brady. Well, I'm not sure you need me. I could say that, but you have to have in these times people capable of helping you make policy choices that could make you better off. That's for sure. We have a call on the line. Go ahead, caller.
Hello.
Hi. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm okay. Thank you.
One thing I'd like to point out as far as the economics is something I think. I wonder what you could give me your view on it. Now, Friedmanism and Keynesianism and What I'm looking at right now with the capitalistic scheme in our country, what I'd like to ask you, with the addition, is there a system to measure the influence of the internet as far as what I am seeing is we have microeconomies as far as people building and within there, the whole notion of capitalism and the ability to compete. We have these microeconomies. And what is happening now, in my view, or what I'd like to ask you, do you believe in a global economy in which the world is already or has already made it to? Do you believe in that type of situation? Could we truly find growth as far as, do you believe we are equipped, to compete with in that situation? Do you think we have the skills, the capital, et cetera?
Okay, thanks a lot. Appreciate the question. Firstly, let's understand that when we talk about global, we really are only describing the collective effect of the individual local actions. So that really, if you say what the global economy is, it's a measuring of all the local economies combined together, and that gives you what the global economy is. When we talk about global companies, as an example, we're talking about companies that they're buying and selling, their trading actually impacts multiple countries within the world. So that chance there are Fortune 500 companies that have staff in the hundreds of thousands all over the world, so that if they shut down, they could globally impact the labor situation. So we're talking, and when we talk about global in that way, we're talking again about a local company that has a footprint in many countries. And then we also have, when we talk about global, we're talking about entities which in their networking and so forth, they have an impact that is across borders in many, many territories. So for instance, some financial institutions have such broad networks that if they had an issue, it would feed throughout the system. So global isn't like some thing that you could go and capture and put in a box and say, oh, there's global. Global is a description for the scope of activity of human behavior, whether as individuals or as corporations, because Jesus is global in that his influence on the beliefs across the population in the world is significant. Muhammad is global. Buddha is global. So you can have individuals who have global appeal. Nelson Mandela was global in his influence in many ways. You have some artists and artisans who are global in that way. And so you have to understand that. Can we compete globally? Yes, we can. We can. We obviously can compete globally. Not all of us, maybe not many of us, but there are Bahamian companies and there are Bahamian entities, Bahamian individuals who can compete globally. But are there many? No. I don't think there are many, but there are some. Right now at home, take a bamboo shot. Does not bamboo shot compete with global companies like KFC, Popeyes? There you go. All right. They're global. They just happen to be here. They are international franchises. You get to see on TV all the time during the Super Bowl and stuff. Do you see Bamboo Shack during the Super Bowl? You do not. We have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Yes, Minister. This is really one of your best shows. Particularly the level of information you're giving out. I can't keep up with it. Asked earlier when I said I'm going to hang up and listen is,
okay.
I attended a seminar some years ago with Reverend Timmy Boss when he was into banking. And he presented a formula that he can't even remember that could determine approximately exactly how much money are in the pockets of Bahamians walking around in the society. Are you aware of such a formula?
No, there's no way to calculate that other than by estimating that if at any particular point in time in the country there is a stock of money, and if you can determine what percentage of that stock of money is in the hands of individuals, then you can divide that stock by the number of individuals and say that that is it. But there's nothing I can think of that would give you with any precision that kind of number, and nothing
at
all.
Thank you. Thank you so much, sir.
You're quite welcome. No problems. All right. And so the money, do we have another call on the line? No, I don't think so. Okay, so we have some other text here. This text says, are you taking inflation and the changing value of the dollar into consideration? $1 million in 1973 has more value than $1 million of today's dollars. Well, first of all, the calculation that I was doing was based on on the gross GDP numbers, all right? And so that number would not have taken inflation into account, but it doesn't matter, because that's one of the great things about trend analysis is when you're doing a trend analysis, you are comparing movements in numbers more than the absolute number. So it doesn't matter what the absolute numbers. What we do know is inflation rate in the Bahamas has been pretty stable over decades. And so if you did do the inflation rate, it wouldn't tell a different story insofar as the trend analysis of what has been happening in the movement of the GDP is concerned. Additionally, the value of the money is irrelevant because the Bahamian dollar's value fixed to the U.S. dollar has been the same since 1973. So that doesn't even arise. Okay, we have a call on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Yeah, pleasure. Good afternoon, Mr. Lang. I hope you're doing well, sir.
Yeah. Yes, I'm okay. Thanks,
Mr. Lang. My question is, what do you guesstimate to be the value of the informal sector of our economy, number one?
I don't think it's, I would say being generous, it's between 5 and 10%.
5 and 10%. So
yeah, I'd say being generous.
Okay.
So that's about $1 billion.
If it's 10 billion, then it was like 500 million thereabout.
No, if it's 12 billion, I would say it's 1.2 billion. That's 10%.
Okay. I thought you said like 5%, 10%. Okay, all right.
Yeah, 5%. I would say, being generous, I'd say between 5 and 10%. 5% would put it at around 600 million. 10% would put it at around 1.2 billion.
My other question is, we're talking about, a lot of people say, let's diversify our economy by getting into fishing, agriculture, whatever, small business, right? But if we're only selling among ourselves, are we really growing our economy?
Well, let me tell you something. You just asked the most enlightening question for the people who talk about diversification that can be asked. Mm-hmm. You just asked the go to the head of the class question.
Unless we get into manufacturing and export, because we, you know, I think we have about 4 billion, I don't know how much in terms of dollar money. I think the central bank, it's a couple of billion dollars in liquidity that's in the economy, right? But if that's just staying there and it's not, I mean, that is as much as we can grow our economy.
But don't get caught up in liquidity, because that liquidity doesn't belong to Bahamians in the majority. That liquidity is, for instance, what banks have earned and institutions have earned and just put up. They just put it up there. They just hang. It's just there in cash.
So that's not really savings from individuals. I mean, part of it probably is, but that's not. Individual savings in terms of...
But the point you're making is an excellent point. Let's take an example. Let's suppose we were able to stop importing, say, $100 million in food because we now make it ourselves. Well, to your point, all we're doing is taking $100 million, not sending it out the country, but we're selling it to ourselves. Does that mean that the economy actually grew? It may not have grown, but the quality of it changes in that now perhaps you have more of it being retained to be used to facilitate growth.
Yeah. So I mean, like I said, we have to think globally in order to really, you know, to we need to think about increasing our population, because 400,000 people thereabout, you know, trying to sell among ourselves. Everybody's trying to do the same thing.
You've been studying economics, eh?
You know, there's not much in terms of growth, you know. But
listen to me a minute. You've been studying economics, eh?
I was in banking and finance and so on.
Yeah, because you are making relevant points. you want to grow your population. That is what tourism has been able to do for us. You know, tourism is kind of like an artificial growth of our population.
Yeah, it is. You know, that's like 10 million plus people that are resident here for at least a couple of hours or a couple of days.
That's right.
That is the only way that, you know, we can really grow our economy. So that's, and even in terms, you know, I mean, they're talking about immigration and so on and so forth. And, you know, because a lot of the Haitians and who don't have papers and whatnot, I mean, we are losing income from them. And so let's regularize them and, you know, and count them in the number too. So, but anyhow,
you've made some very insightful points. I thank you very much. Very insightful.
All right. Have a good day.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Do we have another caller on the line? Go ahead, caller. No? All right. We're going to take our final break, lady.
Bonds or mutual funds, but are unsure if you're reaching your highest earning potential? Get your investment portfolio assessed by an experienced RF investment specialist. You'll get expert investment guidance at absolutely no cost, even if you're not an RF client. Plus, find out how you can take advantage of some of the best performing mutual funds in the market. What are you waiting for? Claim your free confidential portfolio analysis today by emailing invest@rfmeet.com. RF, money at work.
Don't let your children get left behind. Get them immunized. They need immunizations to protect them from some diseases, to get into school, and to apply for some jobs. Contact your nearest clinic or healthcare provider to make an immunization appointment today. Protect their health and their future. Remember, immunizations are free at all government healthcare facilities. Let's prevent disease. Immunize, please. This message has been brought to you by the Ministry of Health.
Say aloha to something delicious from Burger King NASA. Introducing the all-new Hawaiian Whopper and Hawaiian Crispy Chicken Sandwiches. Enjoy the classic flame-grilled Whopper or our crispy chicken breast topped with ham, pineapple, smoky barbecue sauce, cheese, and all the fixins. Grab it with both hands and savor the tropical flavor. Whether you choose chicken or flame-grilled beef, you're gonna love it. The Hawaiian Whopper and Hawaiian Chicken Sandwiches are all new and only at Burger King NASA, where taste is king.
Basketball is back, baby, and so is NBA League Pass, only with Rev Trio. Sign up for Rev Trio today and enjoy NBA League Pass absolutely free, along with incredible prizes, including a brand new 50-inch smart TV, NBA gear, and more. With tons of prizes and gear, signing up for Trio is the best on- and off-court move this year. Just call 601-8992 or visit www.rev.bs/promotions/trio. Sign up for Rev Trio today and enjoy NBA League Pass absolutely free.
Sheila, you okay? I see smoke coming from your window.
Chad, Johnny Moe's burning down the house frying chicken.
Your kitchen is a mess. You have insurance?
If I have insurance, I pulled my phone out, pulled up the Royal Star Assurance app, and in no time, I was on live chat with RSA rep. Sent pics of the damage, filed my claim on the spot.
Wow, I don't think my insurance got that kind of...
You got to go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holler if you feel like you've been down the same road.
It's
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago, and I'm your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon for the remaining of the show. If you want to give us a call in these remaining moments, the numbers to do so are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can also text us on 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 4393043. Let me say a couple of things to you before I go to these texts that I have. The end of this month, the last week in the month, I think it starts the... Let me make sure for you. I don't want to mislead you. That would be the 22nd to the 26th. We're going to be doing a series of shows on all things financial services. We're going to break down the financial services sector for you like you never had it broken down for you. We're going to let you know about all this stuff about common reporting standards. What does it mean to be offshore? What does it mean to, what does FATCA mean? All kinds of stuff we're going to talk about and deal with from the experts who know the financial services sector, because it's important for them is not to be so mystified by this important sector of our economy. So stay tuned. All things financial services series coming the end of this month. So we're looking forward to that. Secondly, let me say this much. If you draw all your income solely from your employment, it's the only thing that you get income from is your job. It is conceivable for you to look at your next 10, 20, 30 years if you're going to stay as somebody working and know exactly what your financial future is going to look like in terms of income. Because if that's the only thing that you're getting your income from, then the growth of your income depends on the largesse of your employer. So if you're the government, if you're a government worker, the growth of your income, if that's the only income you're deriving, and generally speaking, it's supposed to be, generally speaking, unless you get permission otherwise, then your income is going to be what the government determines, whoever it is, Minnis, Davis, Komolafe, whoever it is, that's going to be what your income is going to be, all right? Now, let me ask you, what you think it's going to grow 5% a year, 7%, 10%, 8%? Not likely, unless some things change. Even in the private sector, same thing. Your financial future, if your income is solely being drawn from your employee, your financial future looks like exactly what your employer will make it. All right? That's what it's going to look like. And so if you then look at that scenario, most people in this country get their sole income from being employed. That's it. Sole income. Most people, the vast majority of people, are employees, and that's how they get their money to live. Well, is it then any wonder why over the last 20 plus years, 30 years, incomes have been so stagnant? Have employers been sharing that money, any gains? Or maybe they... Welcome back. It seems we dropped. I don't know what happened. I don't know where we dropped. Anyways, my broad point to you was that if you're employed, your income future is entirely in the hands, basically, of your employer. And so it isn't hard to conceive of what your circumstances, if that's your only income, look like 5, 10, Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know why we're dropping. I can't say why. Don't know. I'm sorry. Don't know what's going on. Anyway, let me quickly read some of your. If you don't take your financial future into your hands and try to find creative ways, then you're going to be where you are, and that's going to be the reality. This text says, Mr. Lang, thank you, sir. You are doing a great job on your show. Sir, keep these shows up. You are teaching us what we were never taught in school. You are doing an awesome job. Kudos. I appreciate your saying so. This text says, good afternoon, Mr. Lang. Your audio has been terrible for the past few days. The callers are about 40 dB above your volume. Can you, your technician, work with to give a better audio? I'm not sure what that's about, but I'll look into it for sure. Thank you very much. This text says, good day. Could this imbalance be one of the reasons why we have some corrupt practices as a culture? For example, people receiving money for services done through the back door as opposed to the front door. You're absolutely right. That could be a part of it for sure. That could absolutely be a part of it. It says, can the parliament fire House and Moultrie? But they'd have to get consensus to do it, because you need consensus to elect the speaker. So the opposition has to agree too. So it could only happen if both sides. Now, given that the PLP wanted to fire him at one point, and now maybe the FNM they want to fire him, maybe they could have consensus. But I doubt that very seriously. But yes, it's possible for them to decide not to him. That is possible. So I'm saying to you that there are structural issues, I believe, in our economy that may be stagnating people's economic financial circumstances. And I'm also saying that it is not enough for us to simply say it's a lack of growth. The United States of America had average growth of just about 2% for 100 years. Average growth. They've had periods of higher growth, but they've averaged over 100. So that's enough growth to produce the wealth and income that they have in their country. So what you are talking about is not merely growth, but where the growth is going. What is happening to the gains? Where those gains are going? And if the Bahamas is going to realize a more quality life for larger numbers of its citizens, of its people, the Bahamas has to have more gains go to households. And I couldn't care less if business people don't like that. I mean, because business people, we know they want to have more gains, and I want the economy to flourish so they can have excellent gains. And so I'm not saying that if your business is struggling, you should pay your workers higher. That don't make no sense. But what I am saying is that we should examine how our companies perform and how
It takes a village to raise a child. And it takes each and every one of us to grow the Bahamas. On the clock, we dive into the stories. We identify the issues. And we engage the people, organizations, and institutions that keep the country running. On the clock with Aaron Green. Weekdays, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. here on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to these remaining moments of the show. Hey, hopefully we'll iron out whatever the issues are tomorrow. Sorry about that. I'm not sure what's going on. Okay, we have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you. Okay, not sure what's happening with that caller. Someone says only his resignation or the dissolution of parliament can remove him. Not only that can remove him, if a vote of no confidence is taken in the speaker and there is the requisite number of persons, he can be removed. That's why the PLP tried to move a vote of no confidence in him before, but the opposition and the governing party did not agree. And so it is possible. It is possible for a vote of no. No one is incapable who was elected by a body to be unelected by the same body. Nobody is incapable of that. And so it is possible for him to be removed by a vote of no confidence. But my point to all of you is that it is necessary for us to think through and work through the circumstance that is produced in households less than adequate and suitable income propositions for themselves. We have another caller on the line. Go ahead, caller, be listening to you. Go ahead, caller. Oh, no? Okay. I have a text here that says, I agree with your comment today that businesses need to give back more than they are doing to their employees. Corporate greed, electricity, amongst other factors, are what's suppressing wages in this country. The cheap labor of illegals also play a role in reduced wages. Great show today and yesterday. Thank you. Thank you. Says you sound much clearer now, but there is still that sound like the TV had back in the day when the screen had no picture, just snow. Okay, well, we'll figure it out. Get it worked out for you for sure tomorrow. Again, don't miss the big picture, folks. It's one thing to want the government and others to give you more, and if they see